Welcome to another PA House podcast. It's a series of conversations with lawmakers and stakeholders about legislation and issues that are currently under discussion in Harrisburg. I'm your host, Mike Davies. Today, we have two lawmakers joining us who are working together and have co-sponsored legislation that has been introduced in the State House that deals with the issues that are surrounding ensuring those individuals coming out of Pennsylvania's correction system can achieve success in re-entering both society and the workforce. Our guests today are Representative Cheryl DeLosier, a Republican member of the House from Cumberland County who serves as Secretary of the House Appropriations Committee and Chair of the Subcommittee on Criminal Justice. Also, Representative Jordan Harris, a Democrat member from Philadelphia, who also serves as a member of House Democrat leadership in the position of whip. I'd like to welcome you both to the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Okay, first of all, I think it's crucial that we frame this problem and the challenges that we're experiencing in Pennsylvania that led you both to consider working together on bills that address these issues and what legislative efforts have already been made to bring about the positive changes in the way we deal with those who are coming out of our criminal justice system and corrections institutions. What's going on?
Well, we have been making many partnerships, and that is something that I think is a strength that we don't hear about too often with our legislative process. Both Jordan and I are very proud of the work that we have done over the last session to bring together many different groups that would not necessarily have been on the same side of an issue. But criminal justice reform is common sense changes to our justice system that need to be taken a look at. I mean, I strongly believe, and I think Jordan agrees, is the sense that any law that we pass shouldn't be in perpetuity without being reviewed. So what we're doing is kind of taking a look at laws that were passed many, many moons ago and asking that question, did they have the intended result? We started working together on Clean Slate, and that was the issue of, you know, when someone comes out of prison, they've done their time, whether it's a short stint, whether they paid fines and court fees, because we're dealing with misdemeanor charges, they've done their time and they've been clean for 10 years without interaction with the police. Why is it that they should be denied a job that they're very well qualified for? And in many cases, their offense had absolutely nothing to do with what it is that they're trying to do. They've now matured. They've become a family person. They've paid their taxes. They've been good community stewards. But the bottom line is that this one bad night has haunted them and they deserve that second chance. So Jordan and I have worked together with many other groups and as well over in the Senate to say that we need to give those folks a second chance and take a look at how they can be good producers in our communities. We have very low unemployment. We want good workers. So we had the businesses and the unions. So we had representatives from both sides saying we need good employees. And Clean Slate was the way that we were trying to help that out on one venue. We have many others in the works. Right, Jordan?
Well, absolutely. I mean, as Cheryl said, we work together to bring, I would say, conservative and liberals, Democrats, Republicans, rural and urban, together, understanding that everybody deserves a second chance and that a person has shown you that they've changed their ways, that we as a Commonwealth should work to help them integrate back into our society, understanding that not only is the right thing to do, but it's the fiscally sound thing to do. When people have criminal records that prohibit them from becoming gainfully employed, they're not putting into our tax base. So Clean Slate is really about taking people from tax burden to taxpayer and helping them lift themselves out of poverty, helping them take care of their families, and helping them become productive citizens while still maintaining safety and order in our communities. You can have both. You can have safe communities while helping formerly incarcerated and convicted folks reintegrate into our society. So we're proud of the work that we've done around Clean Slate. Clean Slate is actually now a national model. There are states throughout the country, from Utah to Michigan to Maryland. I mean, all over this country, there are legislatures who are looking at Clean Slate and trying to implement the same thing in their states.
Well, it's certainly good to know that Pennsylvania is being a leader in this type of legislation. And perhaps this is a good time to talk about some of the current bills that you both are presently sponsoring that take this a little bit further into both workforce development and in dealing with the probation and parole system. What's going on here?
Well, Clean Slate was a first step for us in many ways, working together. But what we've noticed is that there are still impediments that people have to becoming gainfully employed. So House Bill 1477 is a bill that we're working on that deals with occupational licenses. In Pennsylvania, we have over 30 occupational licensing boards, from cosmetology board to real estate to auctioneers to CPAs. These are professions where in order to practice that profession in Pennsylvania, you have to go to this licensing board, their requirements. Maybe there's the degree necessary, there's testing necessary. But these boards then license people to practice their craft in Pennsylvania. What we found is that in most of these boards, they have pretty general language. One clause in it is about a good moral character. I still don't know what what that really means. And what we found is that people who are formerly incarcerated or convicted have seen themselves denied licenses to practice their profession because of things that they've done 10, 15, 20 years ago. And more importantly, things that they've done that have absolutely nothing to do with the profession that they're trying to practice. It's so bad in certain instances that we're training people inside of our prisons to do certain things that when they come out, the board's not licensing them to do. So you already have a hindrance because of the criminal record, but now we as a Commonwealth aren't doing our job in helping you integrate back into society. So 1477 helps us clean up that language and also make sure that, you know, we're looking at the crime, the time of the crime, but also what does that crime have to do with the profession that the person is working on.
And the one thing that I'll add with this new bill also, one of the issues that folks found is that they would come out and that maybe they did have training in, to be a barber, or they had training to in cosmetology, or they had training in certain fields. When they decided, okay, I want to go do cosmetology, and they go through the schools. We have many trainings. We have certain requirements that are necessary to get these licenses. Some are longer than others, because some people went through all of that schooling and paid for that schooling once they came out with the intention of getting a good job, only to find out when they went for the licensure with the state that they were disqualified simply because they had a record. Not because, as Jordan mentioned, it had anything to do with what it was they were trying to do, but because of that good morals clause, they could be denied simply because they had a record, any type of record. So we sat down with the Department of State, we sat down with the governor's office, as well as the Senate. We're trying to all make sure that we can move this forward to make sure that we can say to the folks that are coming out and trying to better themselves, have an evaluation done. See if what it is that's in your background conflicts with what it is that you're trying to go for. So it's kind of a predetermination. When we talk to the Department of State and we've talked to those that do this job every day, we're trying to work out, you know, that compromise and work out what can actually make it work, so that when we pass legislation, we're not doing it and making it hard on DOS to be able to do their job, which is make sure that we have good people working in Pennsylvania. But this predetermination, I think, is a great step to be able to say to people, hey, look, you really have a problem with this. You're not going to be able to go into this field. You have a conflict. So maybe you should take a look at something else before they pay for cosmetology school or they pay for whatever criteria is necessary for a state license.
Also, I understand that there is an effort to make some changes in the parole and probation system just to make sure that people don't get hung up after they're out of the correction system and just wind up getting rolled back in for relatively simple rule enforcements. What's going on here?
That's one of the issues that we've talked about a lot with a lot of different interest groups and those that have been supportive of the fact that, you know, when you have somebody that's come out and if someone has a good job, they're less likely to go back in. They're less likely to have a recidivism rate and go back into jail or prison. But the ability for us to take a look at why have we tried to be that much more of a barrier? One of the examples that we've used a number of times that you can violate your probation and parole if you simply are late to a meeting. That's one of the stipulations. We need to have a hammer. We need to make sure that if something is done wrong, that there's consequences. But throwing someone back into prison because they were late to a meeting is something that the normal public, as we were talking about common sense changes, are going to say, why are we sending someone back? Why are we paying for someone to be back in prison because they went out of state without permission? Okay, they made a mistake. Let's figure out how we can rectify this. But it's more expensive for us to say, because of that, they have to go back and the taxpayers have to pay that burden. We need to make sure that we have this common sense approach to when people come out, let's see what we can do to make sure they stay out.
Right. I mean, the reality is there are instances when people have interactions with the police when they're on probation or parole, when they didn't do anything, but just the interaction alone, whether it's a traffic violation, whether you're being a good Samaritan and you're breaking up a fight, that is an interaction. I mean, just the thought alone, that it's called a technical violation, right? So when you just think about that, do we really want to spend $42,000 a year on a person because of a technicality, right? And what folks don't understand is, and particularly if you haven't been involved in the system, is you get a technical violation, they violate you, they put you in jail or prison, you get a hearing. That hearing could take, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, 2 months for you to get it. Well, that by that time, you've lost a job that you acquired, your car, your house, all of those things. And then you could be released back out. But now you've lost everything and now you're back to the beginning. I think that our justice system, we didn't intend for this to happen. And these are unintended consequences. So what we're looking at in House Bill 1555 is how do we change that? How do we fix that? Data has shown us that after 3 years, if a person has not reoffended after 3 years, the numbers drop dramatically on the chances that they will. But those on probation and parole, if you keep them there longer, there's chances that they'll get tripped up by things that you and I do every day. Think about it this way. You go out and you get a job. Great. You're supporting your family, but you got to see your probation officer at 10 a.m. You're supposed to be at work at 8 a.m. Your employer lets you go the first two or three times. But after that, your employer is like, I need you here. You're a valued member of our team. Well, if you can't see your probation officer, now you could get violated. Again, we're not talking about new crimes. You know, if a person commits a new crime, that's totally different. We should definitely adjudicate them. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about technical things that you and I go through, but because we're not on probation or parole, it's not that big of a deal. We need to fix this system, understanding that it's costing us as taxpayers way too much money, and it's not keeping us any safer. There's nothing that shows us that this system is working on safety. So we need to review what we're doing and change a few things around. And that, I think that's what we aim to do together in House Bill 1555.
Something that you touched on earlier had to do with workforce development and what that means to Pennsylvania. And of course, successfully managing reentry into the job market, it's not just important for those who are leaving the state correctional or justice system, but it's also something that's pretty important to Pennsylvania employers and our state's economy. How does this work? How does having more people being more employable help?
Well, anytime you have good employees, I think it's good for the state as a whole. And yesterday, I was able to talk to a number of the chambers across the state, and they all had the same message. They're looking for good employees. And the ability for us to train them better and to get them better prepared, not only in our prison system, but also in our schools. This is not a Republican or a Democrat issue. It's the fact that we all want Pennsylvania to be stronger in our workforce. So the ability for us to pass bills that deal with not only clean slate and allowing people to get jobs and having that second chance, but also taking a look at not everybody needs to go to college. Many jobs are not being filled in the trades. They can earn a great living without a college education. So not everybody needs to go to a four-year school to get a good job.
One of our major partners in the efforts that we've been doing has been the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry. If you talk to Gene Barr over there, he'll tell you that a lot of employers are saying some of their best employees are formerly incarcerated and convicted folks. So we understand, and the chamber understands, we believe many of our business leaders across this Commonwealth understand. But my belief is that the Commonwealth has to go beyond just these bills. I think we also have to be in a position of connecting people with employment. I think we have to be just as aggressive to connect the formerly incarcerated population with employment, because it makes sense and it saves us money as taxpayers. So there are lots of jobs out there, you know, welding, for example. I mean, I've talked to people in different industries who've told me that, you know, they're paying welders $75,000-$80,000 to start, and they can't find people. I had folks in my office a few weeks ago talking about truck driving and the necessity for those to drive trucks. There are all of these different industries, right? And I believe it's our responsibility as a Commonwealth, particularly with this population, how are we training folks and connecting them with the jobs that we know helps them stay out of prison, helps them take care of their family, it lowers our social service net cost, and it increases our coffers with regards to the resources that we have to reinvest in Pennsylvania through our taxes, because those folks are now paying in to our system. It's a win-win for all of us when we actually sit and do it the right way.
And I think part of that step is also education, too, because I think we need to be working to educate the public. We're working with many of the chambers, as Jordan mentioned, and they are educating their membership on the fact of good employees coming from many different venues. Formerly incarcerated is one of them. And the ability for us to turn that around and also educate employees, because the stigma that goes with an incarcerated individual, someone with a record, you know, if they hire someone and they know that this person was a convict, they don't want to work with someone who was in jail. I'm scared to do that. Well, we need to educate people that we're not talking about opening the bars of all of our prisons and releasing the murderers and the rapists of the world. People make mistakes that are not about violent crime, that are not about someone killing someone else or harming someone to that degree. We're talking about people that could have been white collar crime. It could have been embezzlement. It could have been fraud. It could have been shoplifting. It could have been a burglary. It could have been maybe they were an addict and they were fighting their drug addiction and they did something wrong and they hurt someone maybe. But that is not their normal everyday behavior. And so we also need that education out there in the public to say that people do their time. They've served what it is that our justice system said they need to serve. And now they need to be reintegrated into our communities to be good citizens. And I think each and every one of us that may be listening or in this building can never say they've never made a mistake. And that's a lot of what we're pushing forward is to say, give them a second chance.
And one of the great things that is a little unusual is that you're working together in a bipartisan manner. Are you simply just like-minded on this, or is there a particular advantage to having people working both sides of the aisle on this issue?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, Jordan and I have laughed about it a number of times as to the fact of, okay, you go talk to that one, I'll talk to this one, you talk to that one, you know. Having two individuals that I think are very passionate about making these changes. And I think we both come with our background. You know, I've been a victim's advocate since I've gotten here. I feel very passionate about making sure that we have our victim's voice in our criminal justice system. And so having worked with criminal justice process, being on judiciary, it's been something that I've worked on a long time, and teaming up with Jordan to do the same thing. We are able to talk to different people. Yes, we talk across the aisle all the time, but the ability for us to reach out to people that we have relationships with and bring them together on the issue that both of us support and want to move forward, I think that's a strong thing to do on any issue, this one just being criminal justice.
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be things that we disagree on, and that's fine.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
I mean, that's course
it's policy.
Of what
yeah,
we
exactly.
do. But the reality is, in this building, far too often, even on the things we agree on, people kind of stand in their corners. So is it unique? I guess some would say it's unique, but I think that's sad. I think it shouldn't be unique that we work together on the things that we agree on. And then on the things that we disagree on, we fight like we can for our constituents to get their perspective and their views across. But I think when we go home, whether it's to Philadelphia County or Cumberland County, I think all of our constituents want us to do better and do more to better people's lives. I mean, government is not about getting in the way of people's lives. It's supposed to be about getting out of their way. It's supposed to be about helping them move forward. And I think that if we would see more partnerships on the things that we agree on, right, I think that there's a lot that we can get done in the General Assembly. So, you know, I enjoy working across the aisle on the things that we agree on. And quite honestly, it also helps bring different perspective to the table that I may not have thought of, that Cheryl may not have thought of. But then when we come together, it's like, oh, well, this actually could make this better if we did it this way, if we did it that way. So is it odd? I guess some people would say it's odd. But the truth of the matter is, I think this is what democracy is about. It's about differing opinions coming together to do what we think is best for the collective good of all.
And I think that that's a strength with the fact that we put, you know, working with the caucus that we put together, the Criminal Justice Reform Caucus, is just to that point, is the ability to not only bring Republicans and Democrats together, but also the halls of the Capitol, you know, sometimes seem very long between the House and the Senate. And so we are working with Senator Bartolotta over in the Senate, as well as Art Haywood. So the ability for us to make sure we have those conversations to say, hey, we're taking a look at this. Do you think that'll fly over in the Senate? And then they can start working some groundwork ahead of time that if we're going to pass this House bill out, and they're going to pass the Senate bill, because I know Senator Cameron Bartolotta is doing the workforce mm-hmm. in the prison. So she's heading up that kind of arm of what we're taking a look at is what can we do in our prisons to train people to be ready to come out. So I think that it's a good thing to have that not only Republican, Democrat, but also House and Senate.
And certainly it's a long-term issue.
Yes.
It's something that we're not going to be solving overnight or with just the current bills that are in process. Let's just look into the future. What do you guys see coming up? Other places you can go with this effort?
Well, I think there's a lot of different opportunities that we have. And right now, as we've mentioned, with the professional licensure and the probation and parole and the workforce development, those are the three that we're pushing right now. I'm also working with Marcy's Law for Victims Advocacy and working that to get that to the voters. And I think that we have a lot of different great ideas, because we have a lot of folks that we've been able to talk to that have said, have you ever thought about this, or have you thought about that? And I think that's where the strength of the Reform Caucus will be, is that we can ferret out what we can get across the line, what we can talk to the governor's office about, you know, will he sign this type of bill? And so I think that there are a couple of things that are down the road, but those three issues are the ones that right now are on the top of the agenda, and we can try and work this through the budget process and then into the fall and hopefully get that across the finish line.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for taking the time today to discuss this important issue and what steps our state government can take to improve the process and outcomes for those who are moving through the justice and correction system and coming back into society. Our guests today have been Representative Cheryl Delosier from Cumberland County and Representative Jordan Harris from Philadelphia. And if you want to learn more about this issue or keep up to date on future legislative action, you can visit the websites of both of these members of the Pennsylvania House. That's Representative Delosier at www.repdelosier.com and Representative Jordan Harris at pahouse.com/Harris. And please join us again next time for another PA House podcast.